Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 309. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I am joined, as I so often am, by Neil Ronahan.
Hi, I'm holding at least one 3DS in my hand right now.
That's good. Have you made all the purchases you desire to make yet?
I made two today, actually.
Because you only have like a year.
Yeah, a Kappa's Trail on DSiWare, a Brownie Brown game, which was just like the one DSiWare game that I had on my wish list for like 10 years that I never got. And I also got Kirby's Blowout Blast. Those are my two big purchases on the eShop as we get close to Death Day.
Yes, and also joining us is our lovely editor, Alex DeFreitas.
I am weeping over here, refreshing over the out-of-stock page on the new Nintendo 2DS XL, black and turquoise, refurbished on the Nintendo store. And I was so close. I was so close. The site screwed me over.
You could go to, like, any other website and buy one, not through Nintendo's website.
But they're not going to be $100. And...
Oh, yeah. Are they selling them for $100? That's dumb. Yeah. Maybe they realized they were selling them for too low and they pulled them to sell them on eBay instead. That's what I'd do. Yeah. You're past MSRP, Nintendo. Just sell them as used. They are used.
And I've already like spent way too much on Xenoblade Chronicles X and Star Fox Zero yesterday.
How much did you spend on Xenoblade X?
A little over 40.
Okay, I don't get where you're shopping. Why don't you, next time you buy a game...
Do we need to approve your purchases?
I was going to say, like, send me a link, and I'll tell you whether or not you're overspending.
Sure, well, and, like, price charting is a great site, but is it always reflective of the real market? I'm not so sure.
I mean, things can fluctuate, but, yeah.
Anyways, yeah. Don't be like me. But do buy Codename Steam on Amazon. It's like $5. Maybe a little bit more now.
If nothing else.
Future trivia answer, Codename Steam.
Yes.
At least Xenoblade X is 100% worth $40.
That's, yes.
Like, you know what's not worth $40? Codename Steam.
Yeah.
You know what's worth like 5 to 10? Yeah, Codename Steam.
Yeah.
I've looked at that game on the shelf for single digit numbers a few times and never actually bought it. I like the concept of it.
It's got a very good concept, and yeah, it's like a muddled game, but
yeah,
I think it gets a little bit of crap just because of how it was presented, where like that was like an E3, like, we've got a big secret to reveal. And it was like, hey, it's this weird intelligent systems game that's not Fire Emblem or Advance Wars. Enjoy.
Someone pitched that game to like Stern executives at some point. Someone had to go into a room and be like, all right, so you're steampunk Abraham Lincoln, and like Tom Sawyer is there, like, and so is Mark the Cowardly Twain. Lion. Yeah.
Like old Americana literature figures led by Abraham Lincoln, but not in America.
I forgot Henry Fleming, John Henry.
Yes.
Tiger Lily, Tom Sawyer, the
Tom
Fox.
Sawyer. Yeah. Tom Sawyer makes a comeback.
Queequeg.
How does the game handle its Native American characters? Does it handle them well?
No. Although the voice cast is kind of incredible. Like, it's got Will Wheaton as Abe Lincoln.
Wait, really? I did not know that.
Unfortunately, Adam Baldwin as Henry Fleming. And this is like right around peak Gamergate.
Like, whoa.
But then it has, man, I'm probably gonna butcher some of these pronunciations, like the Venture Brothers guy, James Urbaniak, Kerry Walgreen, Fred Tatasciore, or Michael Dorn is John Henry.
Worf is in this game.
Who is Michael Dorn play? Is he's
John Henry.
Oh, okay, yeah, good pick.
Man, god damn it, I'm gonna buy this stupid game now. Why did you do this?
Because it's not, like I said, it's probably, I mean, one, I don't know why you haven't gotten it. It is like such a 7.5 out of 10 game.
Yeah, but it's like a tactical RPG, right?
This is true.
Yes.
So it's not my kind of game. It's just
very
so
much
weird.
My kind of game.
Yeah. No, it always looked like, I thought it looked neat, but Yeah. Okay. I'll pick it up tomorrow. I'm sure we have copies of it at work. Oh my god, I forgot.
I forgot there's like Cthulhu monsters in it too.
It's such a specific like curiosity of a game. I love it.
Somebody had a vision and they executed on that vision and it didn't work.
I forgot you just like go to the White House. Like that's just a plot point. The Necronomicon's there.
Well, yeah, that's accurate.
Will Wheaton, Abe Lincoln, just, you know, protecting the world.
Like you do. So we're going to talk a lot more about the 3DS and games that you didn't buy for it. But first, we have some listener mail, which we didn't read last week, though.
We didn't get it. Until after recording.
I was going to say it's very relevant to last week. But Neil, you want to hit up that listener mail?
So Chariot Goblin wrote in and said, on the NCL website, the article for Switch Sports contains several screenshots for the game. The avatar/MiiMaker UI is shown and seems to be very in-depth. Below that, a picture of a squirrel avatar is shown. Yes, squirrel as in the animal. The article, when translated, also confirms that you can choose between the new, quote, sportsmates or me as the operating character. What are your thoughts on all of this? Thanks, and keep up the great podcasting.
I think this kind of lines up with what we were talking about last week, that these sports mates are probably technically just me's.
Yeah, yeah, but it seems like it's just like a different presentation of them.
Yeah. For all we know, the squirrels could be me's too.
That'd be bizarre. So like, let's say you set up your me, you import it into this game. Can you see what the sport mates version of your very specific settings?
Would think so, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Switch Sports online test that we technically can't talk about at all.
You're
I
not
going to
talk about
know.
The online part.
Yeah. But there is a character creator there, and it does not seem to be the typical MiiMaker UI.
Okay.
And I think it is some of the avatar UI that's shown in this Nintendo Topics Japan article. Mm. And like, I didn't find any way that I could like import a Mii or like create something in a similar way as a Mii to make a sportsmate character.
Yeah.
It might be more different from Mii's than we expect.
Okay.
But I mean, like it's kind of, I think it's fine. Like,
sure.
I do like that you can still have Mii's in this game because there is something very specific about the jankiness of Mii characters in Wii Sports. That like I'm happy that they'll be able to pay homage to that, even if it's not as much of the focus. And the squirrel avatar stuff is bonkers, and I hope that gets weirder.
Do you think I can scan my Star Fox amiibos and play as Fox and Falco?
Yeah, you can play as Falco. I mean, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Bring me amiibo support.
One of the cool things I saw in these screenshots is one of the bowling ones where there's like very clearly like holes in the lane. And you have to like bowl over a specific little bridge, which could be some cool like single player stuff if there's like very specific challenges you have to do.
Yeah, like that's something that I don't think the online test that we can't talk about will have, like, because I think it's just going to be like go on there and play. I think you can play multiplayer, but it might be like 2-on-2 where you and another player are online. But I am like, I'll be honest, like I'm just really excited that Wii Sports is coming back. And it does, like, I hope they do kind of have those challenge modes. And even from what they showed in the Nintendo Direct, they did have stuff of, like, some of the online, like, that. It seemed like the online bowling modes might not have just been, like, alternate frames. Like, it would be, like, challenges and stuff, which I'm curious to see how all that is, because, I mean, I would assume this is probably done by EPD4, which is the studio that has done, like, Labo and Ring Fit Adventure and stuff like that. And they are definitely among the quirkier Nintendo development houses. And actually, I'm curious, and maybe I don't think there is anything in the online test about it, but we might find out about it someday. But I feel like this is a game that like Bandai Namco is probably working on with Nintendo as well. If either of you remember, they actually worked on Wii Sports Club on Wii U, which is, as I found out when I was like, I don't have a hard copy of that. Maybe I'll try to get that on Wii U.
It's expensive.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think that did not come out from the game. I think the fact that Bandai Namco worked on Wii Sports Club, I think that came out during like an Iwata S or something like that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, it would make sense if this is the Ring Fit Adventure team. That would explain why they're using the Ring Fit leg strap as a
accessory. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, there's just those groups at Nintendo that like are do more with the peripherals than other ones.
Yeah.
You can kind of tell like a lot of the games, like just the similar styles, like you can kind of tell like when Sakamoto was involved or when Tanabe was involved. And I forget the guy who's like the producer of Ring Fit and Labo and 1-2 Switch and stuff like that. I'm excited to do the playtest that we can't talk about.
Yeah, I'm excited to do it and never tell you guys anything about
it. Yeah.
Don't you have to like sign up for it?
Yeah, you have to do it on like the My Nintendo. It's just free to sign up for.
But it'll give you a download code. I think that's just how they make it so that only people with active memberships can get it. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see and not talk about ever.
Yeah. And I'm stoked that they're adding golf. Like, really, I mean, it's they kind of got the good sports from Wii Sports and they're bringing them back. As much as I love baseball, baseball and Wii Sports was neat, but never great.
Now, you know what it needs is an RPG mode that involves every sport.
I mean, honestly, like, that's the magic of Ring Fit Adventure. Ring Fit Adventure, the best new RPG IP in, what, the past 20 years? Like, I think, like, Ring Fit Adventure has outsold, like, every Final Fantasy.
Not 14.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, but they didn't have to reboot Ring Fit to make it not suck.
Well, so you could say that Ring Fit is just a reboot of Wii Fit.
No, it's a successor to Wii Fit.
Because Wii Fit wasn't an RPG.
Okay, yeah, it's a successor. That's a better term there, I guess.
Yeah, Ring Fit, much like Animal Crossing, stumbled into very good release timing. At a time where
RPG revival of Nintendogs. Make it happen.
Yes. RPG fitness.
They could give you a Joy-Con arm strap that lets you hold onto a leash so you can take your dog for a walk.
We need to talk about the leg strap because hopefully they fix it because it just kept on sliding off whenever I was playing.
It wasn't tight enough.
Hey, what kind of pants are you wearing?
Probably like gym shorts when I was playing that game.
Oh, okay, that's usually what I wear, and I never really had an issue.
You gotta play fully nude.
Yeah.
There's okay. No.
I was thinking like we need like a garter belt for it.
Yeah, that could work. Suspenders.
Yeah.
Just glancing at this, and I'm looking at like a vgsales.fandom wiki.
Your think Ring Fit source.
It's just more, at least, you know, might not be totally backed up, but I think Ring Fit Adventure has outsold nearly every Final Fantasy, seven, with all its re-releases and stuff. I think it's like well over 20, and a couple are around 15.
What is Ring Fit claiming to have sold?
Ring Fit's, I think, around 15.
Wow.
13 to 15, I think. Yeah, it's one of the best selling things on Switch.
That's incredible.
It is. I mean, it is very much like the joke about it being like the best new RPG IP in like decades is true.
I can't wait for like Ring Fit Legends Arceus, where it's like kind of more open world approach to Ring Fit. Let me run wherever I want.
And honestly, like, take that, Final Fantasy 15. That game sucked.
Sure does.
Ring Fit Adventure is at 13.5 million sales right now, which is more than a lot of games on Switch. More than Luigi's Mansion 3, I think more than Splatoon. It's like even with Pokemon Let's Go, which is just wild.
That's incredible.
To think about.
Yeah. Can you imagine if they made a Ring Fit? Dude, you could do a Ring Fit Pokemon crossover.
There's so much opportunity for building
totally
on Ring Fit.
You could.
It's weird that they haven't had a like a sequel or something.
I wonder if they were just kind of caught off guard. I wonder if it did. Because, I mean, there were serious supply issue with it. So they may not have anticipated it doing as well as it did.
The chip shortage definitely affected that ring.
Yeah, the many chips.
It's more, if you think about, so what, that did come out fall. It came out October 2019.
Yeah,
and I think
it came out.
Did
yeah,
it had a resurgence when
yeah,
the,
it
when the
did okay,
hit.
from what I remember, like, it definitely, like, it's not like it was a failure that holiday, but like it did fine. And it really was, it had a pandemic boost. Like, not as dramatic as Animal Crossing. Like, Animal Crossing.
Well, Animal Crossing went hit in the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Animal Crossing is second best selling game on Switch, and it's, I think, well north of 30 million at this point, which is bonkers.
Just disgusting numbers.
And like that probably, you know, non-pandemic, guess what? Animal Crossing is probably 15, 20 million sales relatively easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think Ring Fit Adventure also benefited from it almost as much as any other Nintendo game.
Yeah.
March 2020 was just like prime time for Animal
Crossing. Yeah, that was right kind of once everything had resigned to locking down.
Yes.
Like, it was the perfect timing for that game. I think in a lot of places, like, you could still technically run out to the store and grab it as they locked the doors behind you. Like, it was perfect timing.
Yeah, and I think Ring Fit Adventure, just the benefit of the fact that, like, there weren't any chips that had to be made with it.
Yeah.
That could be something where production was ramped up, because I think they did get caught off guard initially in, like, March 2020, because I knew it was hard to find.
There was a phase where I thought about selling mine, because they got extremely expensive.
Yeah.
Like, the resale value of them was crazy.
But maybe Nintendo was wise not to just, like, prioritize doing a Ring Fit 2. Because they could wind up like Peloton right now, where that's not a good scene. I don't know if you guys have heard it.
I don't follow the hot Peloton news cycle.
No. Just I guess to sum it up very quickly, Peloton did very well in 2020. Turns out when things are starting to open up more, people don't want to spend like thousands of dollars on biking at home.
They
ramped up production a ton on making new bikes. And now the demand has, you know, it's not like Peloton as far as like exercise as a service, game as a service, that's still working.
Free
but it's just
exercise.
The bikes themselves, I think they're just kind of stuck with a lot of product that they made.
Yeah,
they had like a lot of layoffs and I think stock going down and crap like that.
The plague giveth and the plague taketh away.
Yep. Nintendo's still humming, so I hope we see Ring Fit 2, just because that first game's really, really good.
Like I said, I think it's ripe for crossovers, and if they do a second one, I want them to lean into the crazy RPG elements.
They do a really good job of it.
Bring in like a intelligent systems or something, and like bring on an RPG team to consult and make go way bigger with it. It'd be great.
Yeah.
But speaking of things that that giveth and taketh away, the Wii U and 3DS eShops announced that they are going to stop allowing you to add payments. Oh, I should have brought up this news story. In a year, right?
I believe they're going to stop receiving like credit card payments in May, and then add money in August.
Yeah.
And then you can't do anything. By
final
the,
shutdown
by
will be March 2023.
Yeah.
May 23rd, you'll no longer be able to add funds via a credit card on the device eShops. eShop cards will stop working in August 29th. And then the final shutdown is in March 2023 and will include the use of purchase download codes and all game / DLC purchases in general. It is worth pointing out that I don't know if there's any way to not have this kind of account on the 3DS eShop at this point. But you can have my 3DS wallet when I did my purchasing of a Kappish Trail in Kirby Blowout Blast is connected to my Switch wallet. So
yeah,
in theory, after August 29th, you can still add money to your Switch wallet, which would then be reflected on your 3DS and Wii U wallet.
I wasn't sure. Have they clarified? Because some of this stuff you can buy through their website. Like you can buy digital games just through the Nintendo eShop website. Is that going down with this? Or is that staying up? Because they've only mentioned the actual like integrated stores on the systems. But the one online is like Switch, Wii U, 3DS, all of it.
I do wonder. Well, one, I think that might be changing because they did have the update to the My Nintendo store today And I think when they first did that update, like all of the Wii U games just disappeared.
Oh, okay.
But it does seem like a lot of how that store is structured, like, Alex referenced the trying to get the refurbished 2DS on the store. There's no like go here to find 3DS systems. It's all Switch and Nintendo brand labeled. Like there's,
yeah,
they're clearly moving on from Wii U and 3DS and just their front facing branding. But I would imagine that the web store will work, but it might have similar limitations as far as when you can add money and buy stuff.
And it's also worth noting that you will be able to re-download things you've already purchased. They have not put an end date on that thus far. So like, I know that came up, we were talking about Xenoblade X, which is, you know, famously one of the games still locked to Wii U. Theoretically, you should still be able to, like, if you buy that game physically beyond this point, you ought to still be able to download like the data packs for that to improve load times and things like that after this goes down.
That I'm honestly not 100% sure, because I don't know if it requires you to, like, it doesn't cost anything to get the data packs, mm-hmm. but you do have to, like, buy them, technically.
Yeah, it's, I don't know not sure how the system registers it. Yeah, 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 I get what you're saying.
That
though.
Is a little up in the air.
Are you redeeming a free purchase, or are you...
Well, as someone here who bought a copy of Xenoblade X, make sure you download those data packs. Don't chance it.
Just download them now, even if you don't have the game.
But when you do, see if it is something that, like, I'm curious if it is like you have to basically do a free purchase in order to get them, or if it is something where it's like, they're already, because they need to be attached to your account somehow.
Yeah,
but anyway, and I know the Wii eShop, it's been a while since I've been on it, but I think that's still up as far as like you can re-download stuff, right?
Yeah. And I will also say, in the specific case of Xenoblade X, as the person who did all of our testing for how much of a difference those data packs make, if you don't get them, not the end of the world.
It's definitely improved.
Some textures on rocks will load in a couple frames slower, and your one loading time you encounter in that game will be slightly longer. So it's not a huge difference.
Awesome game.
Great game.
Probably one of the three Wii U games I would say definitely get.
What are the other two?
Devil's Third.
Nintendo
Land.
And then
a second copy of Devil's Third.
I do own Nintendo Land, Star Fox Zero, and Xenoblade Chronicles X, and Wind Waker HD.
Are those all of your Wii U games?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Did you not have a Wii U when the Wii U was current?
So the Wii U came out right when I was going into college, and my younger brother, my younger brother had a Wii U, and like I lived close enough to home to go ahead and play it like during holidays, but I didn't own one.
Yeah.
And the one time that I did want to play a whole lot of Wii U was Splatoon, but like my university network didn't allow for peer to peer, so it wasn't going to work.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's crazy. And I know me and Neil have talked about this before, but like my Wii U collection, as opposed to every system that came out before it, is bonkers, just because that was when I started covering Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And so I bought a ton of Wii U games.
Well, that's me with the Switch.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of Switch games.
It's kind of the reason why, and I understand for a lot of people, like that there are a lot of 3DS, and I guess the Wii U has like a pittance of amount of games compared to the 3DS. There are people who just weren't, like, you know, I guess covering Nintendo on a daily basis from the launch and to the death of both of these systems. Because I definitely benefit from that. But honestly, with Wii U, like, I feel pretty comfortable and giving what recommendations of things to get, like Xenoblade X, because right now that's the only place to play it. Great game. Wind Waker HD and Twilight Princess HD, like those games will live again on another system. Hopefully, yeah, it's Switch. Coming back. Maybe it's this year.
Realistically, so will Xenoblade X, just not yet.
Yeah, and also, I guess my thing is that I do feel confident that Xenoblade X will rise again. I would not put my life on it. Whereas Wind Waker and Twilight Princess coming back, like, I would say, like, yes, that will happen within the next 5 years.
The other thing is that the Xenoblade stuff is very much like we're focusing on the story elements of this trilogy. And Xenoblade X is kind of outside of that window. And so I do believe that eventually it might make a comeback, but maybe not for the Switch. I'm not sure.
I think we're going to see almost a Pokemon-like pattern of you do your big game, like your Xenoblade. You do your Xenoblade 2. And then you have your smaller team work on a remaster while your next other bigger team works on your next big game. And we just alternate. Like, I think Xenoblade X will be like 2024, maybe late 2023 or like mid 2024. That's my random guess. I was right about the release date of Xenoblade 3. So I have absolute confidence in my release date for Xenoblade X on Switch.
Sure. I mean, like that's a possibility.
I like your optimism, and I hope it's it could happen. It could happen.
And this is a wild oversimplification of how horribly complicated game development is, but it's the same engine that they've been, like, Xenoblade X is the origin of the engine that they've been using for every other Xenoblade game. It would be a relatively easy port. I have to believe that Xenoblade X was one of the most expensive Xenoblade games they've done, because it, compared to all the other ones, the scale of it is just on a different level. And for a Wii U game, it did well. And I'm sure they realized that, like, if we put this on Switch, I think it could be very, very successful. Because Xenoblade X outperformed the original, I believe.
So, I mean, it also actually was, like, released on time.
Yes, but the original, I mean, it sold out. And maybe it outsold the original purely by Nintendo's own resistance to printing copies of the original. But, like, for a Wii U game, it did crazy well. And its best region was America. Like, it makes sense. Like, this could work.
Monolith Soft has been, like, crazy prolific this generation. Like, they've put out so many games.
They're
for
fast.
how big those games are. They crank them out.
They've consulted on every other open world game you've ever played in your life.
Yeah.
So
they also helped out with Splatoon, by the way, which is weird.
Yeah.
It's worth pointing out that Monolith Soft has multiple studios.
Yes.
I forget the exact ones, but there's like the core one, which I'm trying to think. I think there's like a Kyoto studio and a Tokyo studio, but I just won't use the specific names of where they are. But I know that there's one that is kind of like the technical consultant division.
Yeah.
And honestly, they really have nothing to do with the Xenoblade games, as far as I know. But they do, you know, work on tech for other Nintendo companies at large. And a lot of, like, Nintendo recently has had a lot of, like, kind of condensing their development teams. Like, even, I think, what is it? They have the new building in Japan where, like, I think Game Freak and HAL Labs and, like there's a couple developers that they're all going to be in the same building. And a lot of that is just so you can have easier shared resources.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of how that Monolith team kind of acts, is that they're a shared resource to use their technical prowess to help with stuff like Splatoon. And Zelda games, typically. Yeah, I mean, it's been going on for, I think Skyward Sword was the first Zelda game that like Monolith helped out with.
That sounds right, because that was around the time, like, because Nintendo purchased them a little bit before that. Yeah.
Nintendo purchased them early Wii era.
Yeah.
And that was also with Brownie Brown, which became Brownie Brown, developers of A Capish Trail and DSiWare. Brownie Brown became 1UP Studio. When they became 1UP Studio, that's when I don't know if they had become a 100% subsidiary of Nintendo when they were still called Brownie Brown. But 1UP Studio is essentially like Monolith, but for Mario games. Because I think starting with like Super Mario 3D Land, which was the same year as Skyward Sword, like 1UP Studio Brownie Brown has been like credited on assisting with every Mario game, more or less.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like there's a lot of cross pollination, which is probably good. They should go help the Pokemon team more.
Yeah. They need a lot of help.
Maybe send them like an extra Monolith team. How many do we have? Give them a bonus one.
But I do feel with a lot of like kind of talking about Wii U more right now, just because it's the easier one to talk about, because I think that Wii U was very cut and dry, a dead veiled system. There's a lot of things that I love on it. Like, as far as, I mean, digitally, I don't think there's that many games that are like must gets. Like, if you do want to use it for as a virtual console machine, you could always try to have Waking Dreams on the Wii U as opposed to spending a bunch of money on like GBA and DS games.
I'd tell you to buy the Klonoa GBA games, but they've already brought the franchise back. So buy that one. Buy the new one.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, I might get the Klonoa GBA games just because it's a very cheap and easy way to play them.
Yes.
They've been on my wish list on Wii U for a very long time.
And they're a thing good. To remember about if you're going to use the Wii U as a virtual console box, especially like if you use, because like, Switch has bad emulation. The Wii U's emulation was terrible.
Well, for so, like, some things, I think DS is pretty good.
It's fine. It still has the horrible darkening filter. Every virtual console game they released had the darkening filter. Because it was like you see that on like the SNES Classic, but by that point we had figured out, oh, we can just darken the screen when it gets too bright, as opposed to just darkening the entire thing. So they all look kind of rough. So I guess you could use it as a virtual console box, but like have a Waking Dream about RetroArch or something on it.
And I'd have to kind of pour over the list a little bit more, but there's two like digital only indie games that I would definitely call out as like things you should get on Wii U because they stink and rule. I feel like the one that everybody's going to be talking about is Affordable Space Adventures, which is a like 2-3 player co-op game that is just incredible. Just because it makes such good use of the gamepad, basically you have one person kind of like working the fidgety controls of like the spaceship and another person like guiding it on the TV. And you can get a third person in there that I think just like shines a light, which I did while drunk one time. And it was a good it was very fun because you could also like sound an alarm that would then alert enemies nearby and piss off the other people that you're playing with. It was a great time. But also Sports Ball is a game that I'll call out because I adore that game. And I feel like I'm the only person that ever really played Sports Ball that much.
I own that game.
It rules. It is basically just like chaotic, weird joust, multiplayer joust. And it just has the doofy like Wii U implementation of like one person can watch it on the gamepad and using the microphone on the gamepad commentate on the match. Which is just like totally unnecessary. Like doesn't make a difference. It's just really neat.
Yeah. Is Scram Kitty and His Buddy on Rails a Wii U exclusive? Yeah,
I think
so. Did that
so.
Never come out anywhere else? Because that would be
that's a great game from Friend of the Site, right?
Sure. Rodri Broadbent.
Yeah.
We interviewed him for the Star Fox Command documentary. Yeah, I think that's only... Oh, no. I guess it came out on PS4 and Vita, according to Metacritic. So it is
Wasn't
safe.
There like a Scram Kitty DX or something?
There may have been. That's what's on PS4.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. I'm glad that came out elsewhere.
Now, that's safe until Sony shuts down their servers, which will be in like a couple years. Roger, you should port that to Switch.
Yeah.
I know you're listening.
But the 3DS, like, there's so much on 3DS that
there is a lot. There's a lot of, like, first-party digital-only stuff on 3DS, which is crazy.
Pushmo?
Boxmo?
Yeah, the whole Mo family. All of the Dylan's Rolling Westerns, which are, you know, questionable, but...
The third one, which is the best one, is, I think, a physical release everywhere except for America.
Bah. And the 3DS is region-locked, so, like, tough shit. Yep.
Rusty's Real Deal Baseball.
Yep. Which will be functionally unplayable, I think, when the time this is done. Well, I guess maybe you would have had to have already had pay the money.
Right, because anything that's like pay to... So that's going to be a problem for like Steel Diver Subwars, Tank Troopers.
Yeah.
Was Tank Troopers free to play?
No, I don't think Tank Troopers was.
Okay.
But even like Pokemon Picross, there were a lot of free to play Pokemon games, although Pokemon Picross is the only one that I think was really that good. I think Shuffle's on mobile, and they also have like a new Shuffle or something. I forget the Cafe Mix one.
There's a ton of Fire Emblem DLC that's just going to be lost to time.
Yep.
Including a full campaign in Fire Emblem Fates?
Yeah. Yeah, because there was a third one, unless you have the Fire Emblem Fates, edition. Like the special edition that has
all three campaigns on one cart.
And it's a shame that I don't like that game, because I do have the special edition still.
What a trade.
But yeah, I mean, and Pocket Card Jockey, which honestly is, I think, maybe my favorite game on 3DS. Picross 3D Round 2. That's another 3DS game that I adore that is digital only in America. I think it released physically everywhere else. Harmonite, Game Freak made rhythm platformer that's really good. Fluidity Spin Cycle, which, why did that guy? The guy did like Stealth Inc. and Sword of Ditto. Also, the first Fluidity is already lost to time because it's only on Wii.
Yeah.
A very good version of Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tokyo Crash Mobs, a bizarre, Magnetica. There's it's like Zuma, if anybody remembers that.
A very non-existent version of Mighty No. 9.
Yeah. Still waiting for it someday.
There is a, I'll give a shout out to Ironfall, which is a totally 7.5 third person shooter, but is also a 3DS game that somehow looks like a 360 game because the magic of really BD Dev. Like, they're just like, we don't care. We'll do it at 60 frames per second and it looks amazing. And it also has online multiplayer. But I don't. The online server stuff isn't being affected by this, right?
I think it should.
Will it?
Maybe.
I don't know. I think it's okay. I don't know. We should also mention that with this, we'll go DSiWare.
Yeah, DSiWare will finally die. So get your Xscape now.
Yep. That's it.
I mean, also, honestly, there's a lot of really, once again, first-party stuff on DSiWare. A Capish Trail, which is, I haven't played it, I just bought it.
But you have brought it up like six times in this episode.
But like Starship Defense, a Q Games joint, there's a lot of Q Games. Another Q Games joint.
Yeah, Q Games were the king of DSiWare. Another Q
Games joint. A lot of good art style games. PictoPix. Just a lot of tremendously great Nintendo games that are going to be gone. I mean, I guess save up for your $4 or $5 apps on DSiWare and 3DS or Waking Dreams.
I think there's like a DSiWare port of Earthworm Jim for some reason.
That sounds right.
That's like pretty good.
All the 3D classics
on there. I think there might be a DSiWare version of Myst, which you should not play. It's terrible.
Like 15 Etrian Odyssey games that are all great.
I bought all of those when they were on sale. Good. That big Atlas sale. Yeah. They're like $8 each or around that price.
Yeah, because you have Etrian Odyssey 4, Etrian Odyssey Untold, Etrian Odyssey Untold 2, Etrian Mystery Dungeon, which is a fine Mystery Dungeon game, Etrian Odyssey 5, Etrian Odyssey Nexus, Persona Q, Persona Q 2. Then you have a bunch of Shin Megami Tensei games that are all largely good.
Radiant Federation Historia. Force,
the GOAT. Yeah, Radiant Historia. Love that game. Ever Oasis, maybe if people bought that game back in 2017, 3DS would still be around.
Ever Oasis has a physical release, at least.
Yeah, yeah. And now I'm looking at a list of just games that we rated highly.
Okay.
Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix. That is digital only, and possibly the last Rhythm Heaven game.
And I guess we can talk a little bit about what this means from a preservation perspective. And I do want to throw out there that these games, from two different perspectives, you do not need to worry too much about the preservation of these games. A, because as we saw from the Giga Theft, Nintendo does preserve all of their old stuff and doesn't just throw it away in the bin out back.
This is true.
But then secondly, the entire Wii U and 3DS eShops, including DSiWare, which I don't think we even have a way to emulate yet, have all been ripped. So this stuff is preserved. And should one fall asleep and have a waking dream, is fully obtainable.
I will say there's something to be said about the era of dual screen gaming that this represents. Mm-hmm. And like the hardware to do this again, even in a waking dream, isn't going to be the exact same.
It is not ideal.
This is true.
Yep.
Because you're going to lose the touch screen. You're going to lose having those screens being that close to each other and in that setup.
And with the Wii U going with it.
Yeah.
Like the Wii U is one of the few systems capable of somewhat accurately emulating that.
Right.
Now, you know, of course, mouse and keyboard works pretty darn well for touch screens. But
sure.
Yes, it's there are going to be some games that outside of playing them on actual hardware. You're just not going to get that same experience.
Right.
Maybe for the best for some games, like if this were to force Nintendo to port Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks to a system where they just control normally,
I'd be all for that.
There really is like just 10 years of Nintendo games that are tied to weird hardware.
Yep.
Through DS, Wii, 3DS, Wii U, and I do wonder how those games will survive. We've seen some of it. Skyward Sword. That is now, I guess, relatively, I mean, maybe not totally future proof, but like it controls with buttons.
Yeah.
That's something that you could probably replicate. But like, what are we going to do with 3DS and DS games?
Yeah. They require like Skyward Sword. When they brought that to Switch, they did develop software to not just completely emulate Wii games, but essentially run them natively on Switch. So it does seem like there's some interest in making it easy to bring that stuff to Switch. Maybe that's why we're getting the Switch version of the Force or the Wii version of the Force Unleashed.
I mean, we are getting a Wii Sports game.
Yeah. So I think the fact that Nintendo developed that as opposed to using emulation for Skyward Sword kind of implies that like there is an interest in doing more of that. But yeah, for like 3DS stuff, it obviously requires a much more hands-on, like, you know, Miitopia on Switch is a pretty different...
like, Kid Icarus Uprising is not something that would directly translate to a home console.
Now, honestly, I think it works better dual stick, but you have to go in and change that game. You can't just throw it in an emulator and call it a day.
And there's definitely balancing issues that would be related to that, because it is designed for the weird... The touchscreen's trackball.
I mean, it's very much we've talked about it with Star Fox Zero. And a major reason that may never come to Switch is that so much of it is balanced to be played a very specific way. And the Switch can get close, but it can't exactly deliver that same thing. And you can't rely on it being played in a way where it can deliver that same thing. So you have to adapt to it. It's the Mario Galaxy 2 problem of...
Yep.
You can't trust that Yoshi is going to be being used in a way where Yoshi can actually be used. So better to just not bring it over at all.
Yep.
But yeah, that's that. Neil, you've made a couple purchases. Alex, it sounds like you've made a couple purchases. Alex, have you bought any digital only games in a panic for this?
The Etrian Odyssey games from a couple months ago. That was a big like.
I tried to warn everybody.
Yeah, the Atlas sale. Like, this is probably not going to happen anytime soon. Yeah. So, just buy them all up. So I bought Mole Mania when you guys were
game rules.
You guys were doing an episode on like the Analog Pocket and for Frog the Bell Tolls, I think is the name of it. And so you guys brought up Mole Mania, and I just looked it up on 3DS. Like, oh, it's only like $3. It's crazy expensive to get it physically.
Yeah. So. Yeah, like that's the thing. And I was just kind of looking at my 3DS and the library of Game Boy games on Virtual Console. And the fact that like most of them are priced like $3-4.
Yeah.
I think Game Boy Color games are like $6. But for stuff like Oracle Seasons, Oracle of Ages, that's a very good price. And a lot of those Game Boy games, like I got educated on like a lot of like Avenging Spirit, I think, is something that was kind of like, I don't think I'll recommend people go buy a 3DS to get Avenging Spirit for $3. But there's just like this deeper world of Game Boy games that I experienced because of Virtual Console on 3DS that I never played before. Same with Game Boy Color games. Like that's how I first played Shantae on Game Boy Color. And now that's actually on Switch. So it's preserved. But I mean, like Wario Land 2 and I think every Wario Land game, I think 4 was an ambassador game. Just that's the thing with 3DS that I keep coming back to, and it's something that I've kind of settled on, I think even to this day, with the Switch being as good as it is, I think the Nintendo 3DS is my favorite Nintendo console of all time. Largely because I think the 3DS library on its own, while it eventually devolves into being like Nintendo and Atlas Sega publishing games and everybody else left, I think it's a very strong lineup, just a solid library on its own. And then you factor in the fact that every DS game is backwards compatible, and the DS yeah. has an incredible library. And then you have on Virtual Console, you've got Game Boy Color games, Game Boy games, Game Gear games, where there's like, I don't know, three good ones. You have the 3D classics. You even have NES. And if you have new 3DS, Super Nintendo games are accessible as well. There's just an incredible library of content that spans like legitimately almost 30 years of Nintendo's history. Like I think that the 3DS is more of a complete summary of like, here's what's cool about Nintendo than any other console that they've ever had. I think maybe Wii U might come close as well, but the 3DS was a system that actually existed in reality.
Yeah.
It wasn't a myth that failed very quickly. I mean, because 3DS does have, it's got what, 2004 to 2017, it has Nintendo's handheld library, and then it has a lot of stuff from before that era going back all the way to Game Boy, and then the DSiWare. Yeah. Like there's, I could go on for entirely too long about how many good games are available on the 3DS, and honestly, for a lot of them, they are going to get, you know, not totally inaccessible, but a lot less convenient the minute that shop goes down.
Yeah, the 3DS is like the pinnacle of Nintendo's handheld line, because I think it takes a lot of, it has just the catalog of games from previous generations, but also I think it's a more refined version of the DS. I feel like a lot of the DS games were way too gimmicky, whereas this has, it has the dual screens, it has some of that functionality, but the games are just a lot more robust.
It's too bad it can't run Game Boy Advance games. It's just impossible. That can't be done.
Yeah.
It can run everything else.
No, it can run Game Boy Advance games just fine. It has a Game Boy Advance in it.
Yeah, well, it can run the Ambassador games.
Yeah, but just I think
Game Boy Advance games.
The issue with that was always like, for some reason they couldn't figure out how to do the sleep mode, I think was the supposed reason.
Look, if your 3DS ever goes to jail and you end up breaking it out of it, you can get Game Boy Advance games to run pretty well.
Yeah.
All I know is that like my Wii U doesn't seem to have any problem suspending Game Boy Advance games and just throwing on.
To be
safe
fair,
state.
Your Wii U has a much higher processor.
It doesn't need. A Game Boy Advance game can run on your average toaster.
Yeah, the 3DS isn't that advanced.
It could do it. It can do it. I mean, you can do it.
I mean, yeah, it can play the games easily. But I think there's a difference between doing it in an emulated form and doing it in a retail available for everybody that possibly gets this thing form.
Yeah, it's just weird that they kind of did it.
Yeah,
like, yes.
Yeah.
Like I played through Minish Cap on my 3DS in an official release of Minish Cap on my 3DS, but nobody else is allowed to.
Fusion. That's how I played Fusion for the first time.
Yep. That's how I played Fusion for the Game Club.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss that damn thing. I haven't been playing it that often. I've turned my back on it. But I will return.
The last thing I bought for my DS was Cop the Recruit, which is a fucking rad GTA clone where you play
as a
cop.
Good game.
It's like runs at 60 frames per second. I think it might be VD Dev. I don't remember.
I think it is VD Dev.
Of course it is. VD Dev doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, that's just them and Shinen. Just like, we're gonna make this look incredibly too good.
Where is Shinen? And like,
I mean,
why are they just releasing Art of Balance games?
The Tourist came out.
That's okay. I mean, yes, that was them.
It was like
they're
2 years ago.
They're based in Munich. They're in Germany.
Yeah, but they've been porting the Tourist to everything.
Yeah,
yeah. Like that's come out on PlayStation.
What I love
and
is like
Xbox
the now. Yeah, the Tourist was like a Series X launch game and like ran at like 300 frames per second or something.
Right. Well, when you make a game that could run at Switch at 1080p 60, then you ought to be able to put that on anything else and have it run God mode.
Yeah. Yeah, the last thing that VD did was Rise Race to the Future on Switch.
Which was great, by the way. Yeah. Really
Iron
impressive.
Fall was before it. Oh, game. They did. I forgot they did Driver Renegade 3D on 3DS.
They did a bunch of 3DS stuff. They did some Game Boy Advance stuff that's, of course, all fully 3D. Because, yep, once again, fuck it.
I mean, oh, man. Nano Assault's another game. Just thinking of Shining.
Yeah. Though at least that one has a Wii U release. Wait. No, that's going out too. Hey, we should buy... Everybody buy Nano Assault on either 3DS or Wii U.
Or
I think that
PS4.
Might have come out on PS4. Okay.
Yeah, it's on PS4.
So, Nano Assault Neo X actually had a PS5 release last year.
Did it really?
Yeah.
That's a great game.
That. Yeah.
Cool combination of like twin stick and then like a rail shooter at times.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
But then some of the older stuff, like there was Nano Assault EX came out on the eShop. Nano Assault Neo is, that's probably the version that's on PS4 and PS5. The first Nano Assault was on like a 3DS launch window game, I believe.
I want to say Nano Assault on 3DS and Nano Assault Neo are, I think there's cross, like I think Neo is kind of like a remaster. Yeah. It's like Fast Racing RMX.
Yeah.
Anyway, you have a year. Buy all your Wii U and 3DS games.
You have a year, and then you have until the 3DS itself breaks down. Because a point that Kelsey Lewin of the Video Game History Foundation brought up on Twitter that I thought was...
She's a real bummer sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like your
3DS... With her harsh realities.
Your 3DS is eventually going to break down. Like, they're not going to have the longevity of, say, a Game Boy. You know,
yeah.
There's a lot more delicate electronics, the hinges, the shoulder buttons, those are going to all break down. So cherish your 3DS while you have it.
Yeah, Kelsey is a really nice person, but really, really will harsh your buzz when it comes to you thinking that your collection's going to last.
True.
She will just show up out of nowhere and be like, listen, everything's going to die eventually. And you're like, Kelsey, stop. Let me believe.
Your consoles will become e-waste at some point.
Yep, everything's melting.
Mm-hmm.
But in better news, Neil, you and I have been playing some games. Alex has also been playing some games, but is legally prohibited from talking about any of them. So just rest
banned.
Assured that Alex has
played
some
games. I did
play
Final Fantasy Tactics on the dream that is the Vita. Another thing that is...
The PS1 version?
No, the War of the Lions version.
Oh, okay.
Is that the PSP release?
Yes, yeah. It's PSP, but you can buy it on Vita. While the store is still up. Speaking of which,
for now,
it's very, very good. Some of the best writing, some of the best storytelling. But that was like I beat that game like 3 weeks ago. So
yeah, I never played War of the Lions. I remember I loved Final Fantasy Tactics on PS1, and it's one of the reasons where every time I see Triangle Strategy, I'm like I should probably try that. But Neil, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Retro Bowl, which came out on Switch last week, just before the Super Bowl. It apparently, I think it got popular on TikTok, is what the internet told me.
Oh.
It was a mobile game first, and that definitely does shine through in what the game is. For people who haven't seen Retro Bowl at all, it is basically like an indie dev made new Tecmo Bowl. That is like the presentation is 100% that. But what makes it very engrossing for a weekend, as I found myself putting in a lot of hours into it, is that there's a lot of like pretty good like team management sim crap in there too.
Mm-hmm.
So the games themselves, like you only play offense, and it does it where it's not as complicated as a Madden or something where you only have, I think it's like 5 to 10 named players on your team. And everybody else just is kind of like an average player. So you'll have your quarterback and you can, you know, drop back to pass. You can run. It has touchscreen controls that you can, like, that's kind of how like I first started playing it, where you like drag back and then, you know, kind of like fling it to throw the ball. But you can also use like the analog stick to do that. So it's kind of like you'll go back to pass and like have the analog stick back, point in a direction, and then let go to try to, you know, throw the ball at the receiver. And it's kind of snappy in that. You don't have as much like minute control over your plays or anything. but it's a really like fun little game to try to figure out, you know, ways to score and survive. And then it, and then the thing that like does suck a little bit is that you, you just have no control of your defense. So like I've had games where it's like, oh, like I wind up winning like 28-0. And there's other ones where like I'm actually doing very well in scoring, but my defense just gives up like a touchdown every drive. And it, it makes it hard. It also does have like dynamic scalable difficulty that kind of seemingly reacts to how good you're playing, which sometimes just got like super unfair, it felt. But I did have one season that I played where I went 20-0 and won the Retro Bowl.
Congratulations.
But I wound up playing, I think I got like 4 or 5 seasons into it. And you start off where you can pick your favorite team, but they're like, hey, don't start with your favorite team, so that way you can build up to that. So they are not specifically NFL teams, but like it's the uniforms are all the colors of teams. And there's sure. a Carolina, Green Bay, Los Angeles R, Los Angeles C. And like they all have uniforms that are similar to the real NFL teams. It really does feel like it's almost copyright infringement. But I start off, yeah, my first season I was the Carolina Panthers, not the Panthers, and then I was Indianapolis for a couple years, and then finally got to move over to Green Bay. But it's really enjoyable. There's like a draft in it, and you can trade players, you can sign free agents. There's a lot of like stats and numbers that go up. Your named players will have potential of up to 5 stars. And as you play with them, they earn experience points. And then you can kind of allot them to make your receiver better at catching or have a higher stamina or be faster and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the kind of the way that I figured out to do better at defense is, making sure that your named players on defense were very good. that was kind of the way to go. It works because it makes it snappier. I feel like if you play defense as well, like the games might drag a little bit.
Do you see the defense? Do you see it happen, or does it just tell you the other team made it this far?
No, it'll just be like, oh, like you punted the ball. They're going for it on fourth down. Oh, they got it. And it'll say like Burns was too slow or something like that. So that
fucking
way you do
Burns.
Know. Yeah, that son of a bitch. but so that way you can look at the defense stuff and be like, okay, like I had this player kept on.
Yeah.
He wasn't strong enough. So then I can make sure that they're stronger when they level up.
Huh. That's an interesting way of doing it.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. It is $4.99 on the eShop. I think if it was any more than that, I would maybe pause a little bit.
Sure.
I wound up, it was available for $2.99 on pre-order, and like hours before it went up, I saw it and was like, oh, I'll just get this.
Yeah.
I could go. It's like the only football game on Switch.
That's true. Yeah. The competition is sparse.
But like it's a really neat game, and I'm curious, like I'll keep an eye on this developer and stuff, because I feel like it's a really good foundation that if they make a game more specifically for consoles, I would love to see it, because it seems like they kind of understand like the fun loop of an arcade sports game, and especially with adding in some of those RPG elements, because like it's really fun to just like sit back and just like burn through a couple games and then work on ways of like, so if I trade this player that like, oh, like his age is like 38, he's going to retire soon, but I can get a first round pick for him. And then next year I can, get a couple first round picks, and then, okay, so they're going to start as like 2-star players, but they have the potential to go to 4 or 5. And then you also like accrue like coach credits that you can then use to level up players and get free agents and stuff. I'm getting stoked for my MLB The Show hardcore RPG, where I don't do any gameplay and I just like sim seasons.
That's probably going to be the best way to play the Switch version.
Probably.
Stick to the menus.
Don't look at the actual game as much as possible.
We can go to like Neil's most time play. I was trying to look for it. I think it was something like, what's the earliest sports game you got hooked on? And there was a PC release of, I believe it was Tony La Russa Baseball in like the mid 90s, where I don't think I ever actually played that game. it just had like legendary rosters. So I would just like do like simulations of seasons because it is like all of like the stats and, you know, like leveling up your team and trying to min-max to see how good you can make your team. Like that stuff gets really fun.
I had a baseball game on Super Nintendo as a kid that I played a lot, but it wasn't any of the good ones. I'm trying to remember what game was it. Nope.
Tommy Lasorda Baseball on Sega Genesis is fantastic. That is one from that era. I played a lot of Bases Loaded. Those were acceptable. Yeah, the Griffey games on Super Nintendo and N64 were solid.
Yet, I don't think it had a player's name associated with it. It wasn't RBI. I don't know what it was.
If I recall, the Sports Talk baseball and football series on Genesis had some good voice sampling.
Well, that's always good.
Because it would have like whatever, like it was like, I forget who the baseball player was that they had with it. They might not have had a player associated with it, but it would just be like, play ball! But it would be in like gross yeah. Genesis.
I think it was MLBPA Baseball
okay.
from EA Sports. That looks right.
I'm trying to, I've probably played that. Like there is, in my days in the mid to late 90s of being like a kid going in with like $10 to a Funko Land, mm-hmm. Guess what you could get with $10 at a Funko? The 10 sports games, baby.
Yeah.
sometimes I would do that.
Well, there were, I mean, like the baseball games that Rare did on Super Nintendo are like crazy cool.
Rare didn't do both of them. They only did one
Which
of them.
Which one did they do? Because they did the one that was like,
They did Winning Run.
Maybe you know it when you see it because it has a bunch of pre-rendered 3D graphics and a David Wise soundtrack.
Yeah.
So, like it's
oh
very...
God, and the Fallen Brothers did the first one. Yeah, Winning Run is the one that Rare did. Software Creations did the first one, which is just Ken Griffey Jr. presents Major League Baseball on Super Nintendo. But the Fallen Brothers did that soundtrack. I don't know if either of you are familiar with the Fallen Brothers, but they have done some bonkers ass incredible like next level game music.
But not next level games music.
No. As far as like, that's like different. Honestly, some of the best NES and like, well, they actually did, let's see, Plock, which is a really good soundtrack. Spider-Man, X-Men, Arcade's Revenge, Pictionary, that classic, Silver Surfer, Solstice, Sky Shark. Okay. But like they go back to like the ZX Spectrum. And that era. Yeah. And I think they worked a lot with Software Creations. But yeah, if you ever like, they did a lot of like unassuming games, but the soundtracks for them like slap in ways that you can only dream of. Like the Silver Surfer soundtrack for that NES yeah. game. I got that game because it was a Silver Surfer game as a kid. And I just like had my face melted by the audio.
I went through a little kick the other night of playing every Star Trek game that came out on Super Nintendo. I go through these phases where I find it interesting to listen to how the different developers recreated the theme, same theme yeah. song. Yeah. Which was fun. Pretty much all of those suck. But I will say Star Trek Starfleet Academy has like full polygonal 3D ships on Super Nintendo and like crazy cool space combat. And like three levels. So it was cool. They put all their work into those three levels. So I, on the other hand, have been playing, much like you, a retro game. But I've been playing Power Slave, which recently got a release on Switch. It is a game from 1996. It was a first-person shooter. And depending on where you played it back in the day, you played a very different game. On consoles, it's sort of like a weird, it's almost a Metroid game. It's kind of a strangely non-linear early first-person shooter. But if you played it on PC in 1996, then you played Duke Nukem, essentially. Hmm. Just a straight-up linear first-person shooter. It was a very different game from the Sega Saturn and PlayStation versions.
Were these different devs working on the same game, or?
Yeah, it was Lobotomy Software both times.
I forget exactly. I think it was the same, might have been the same exact developers, but like same company.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and I don't know what the reason was behind it being different. I believe it ran in the same engine on both, which was the same engine that ran like Duke Nukem and everything, I think. Or no. Hang on. I brought up the Wikipedia page. So the console version ran in the Slave Driver engine, which is a name it's that Disney would never named. Allowed today. Yeah, that would be the Fire Spitter engine today. whereas the PC version ran in the Build engine. So the difference in gameplay may be down to engine limitations, actually. But I don't know if that's true. But the version that came out on Switch and other consoles, including PC, that's remastered, is a combination of the Sega Saturn MPS1 versions. Those versions were mostly the same, but had like some differences in geometry. Some would have like slightly different level designs. Yeah. And so they kind of took the best of both, combined them into a single game. And the result is a weird, extremely 90s game about a town or a village in Egypt being taken over by ancient evil god demons. And you, as a generic American man that's part of some military team, boarding a helicopter, and much like Winback, your helicopter just blows up for some reason, and you are left alone to deal with the angry Egyptian gods. and the plot makes no sense. In the first level, you're in the tomb of the pharaoh Ramses, who you may know from such iconic literary achievements as the Bible. And Ramses, yes. both key the major literary accomplishments of the human race, the Bible and codenamed Steam. But you go into his tomb and he pops out as a floating 2D head and like briefs you on everything you need to do. And it's there that you kind of realize that the game is going to be different from any other first person shooter at the time, because like he gives you an objective and serves as sort of like your hub world, as opposed to just being like, go to the next level. He's like, all right, you're going to go to the village of Karnak. You're going to take like head north, go across this bridge. That'll lead you into these ruins. And in those ruins, you'll find this artifact. And that artifact winds up being like a super jump. And so you get that artifact, and then that lets you go back into the village of Karnak and take a different turn and get into this area you couldn't get to before, which then leads you further. And eventually that gets you to another power up, which lets you access some other place. So the whole game as a first person shooter kind of gives off like a weird proto Metroid Prime vibe. That's crazy to see in 1996. Because like, I mean, this is, you know, vaguely contemporary with something like Super Metroid, but it's doing things that you would see generations later in Metroid Prime. So it's just a fascinating game. Has a crazy cool like rock soundtrack, feels really snappy on Switch, has a really good CRT filter, and it's just, I'm having a lot of fun. I had never played it before. I had heard of it. Digital Foundry did a really good video on it that I highly recommend.
I agree. I also saw that video.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, just any of the DF Retro content. They also have one where they go through every single version of Doom and break down like the differences in every port. Incredible stuff that they do over there, and it's great, and you should watch it. But I love first-person shooters from this era, and this was one that I had never touched. And so to play it and find something that's super unique is really cool. It really feels like a lost treasure, because I had, outside of that Digital Foundry video from like a year ago, which I think was sparked by this remaster, I had never heard anybody talk about this game. So a really cool, just weird treasure to uncover and then have turn out to be really good. Like even just the first person shooter elements feel fantastic. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'd never heard of this game before like a month ago and it just seems super neat and it's cool that it's on modern platforms.
Yeah. Yeah. And it runs great on Switch. Has some, as with any of the Night Dive remasters, tons of fun, like options to like, you can play it at the original resolution. You can change how the shading works and anti-aliasing and a CRT filter. And then you can customize exactly how the CRT filter works and do all kinds of stuff. Like you can get it, you can intentionally make it render the game worse and like mess up some of the accuracy of geometry and textures to make it run more like it would have in 1996.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, just stuff like that that I absolutely love that Night Dive does in their games.
Yeah, the only, I mean, Night Dive did that Quake remaster that a lot of people loved. I personally don't have any nostalgia for Quake. It's been on my wish list on Switch, but I have not pulled the trigger on it. I kind of want to see it just because of all the work that went into it.
Yeah,
but
great remaster either way.
Yeah. I did play some Turok 2 online.
Yeah.
Because they added online to the Switch version.
I had a blast.
That was straight up like went to Taco Bell, got a Mountain Dew and was like, all right, let's go back in time. It was so much fun playing that online. And it really does make me hopeful that there were some rumors about it of like GoldenEye coming back.
I would love to get
Xbox or whatever, but like get me GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. I know Perfect Dark's already on XBLA and still on Series X, but like,
yeah.
Oh man, like just I have so many good memories of that specific era of like console first person shooters.
I would love to give Night Dive both of those games.
Yes.
Because the thing that they do that I feel like other people don't do is simultaneously give you the best way to experience the game exactly as it was, while also letting you totally modernize it.
Yeah.
In ways that just no other studio does. And they adapt the controls really well too. Like,
yeah,
they're not afraid to be like, all right, we want to make this feel like a modern first person shooter. Even though it definitely wasn't when it came out.
Yeah. Like Turok 2, like definitely of that N64 era. Like I was way more like GoldenEye Perfect Dark kid than I was a Turok 2 player, but like played a little bit of Turok 2, but like honestly playing that game, what it was like riding a bike. Just for that specific vibe of those games of that era.
Yeah. Yeah. I would give them like the old Battlezone games. Give them R-Marines for N64. See if you can make that work.
I was waiting to hear what you had to say about Power Slave. And I think at some point I'll probably pick it up just because it seems really neat. Like I love the idea that it's almost Metroid Prime before Metroid Prime.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so. Well, even, I mean, you know, the ruined Egyptian city kind of almost gives you similar vibes to some of the areas of Talon 4. So it's a very easy comparison to make. And then some of the power-ups you're getting are very much, you know, the same line of thought as Metroid. So it is not a hard comparison to draw. And I think it will occur to pretty much anybody playing it.
And a crazy fun fact, too, is the fact that Lobotomy Software is actually ex-NOA people. Were involved with forming that studio. Yeah. It was basically NOA people that wanted to make their own games.
Interesting. They didn't last long.
No.
I just went and looked them up. They went out in 1998.
But I think some of the people involved are still around in games. I was looking it up earlier just because I was like, wow, wait, no, they do actually have they do have legacy with Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like one of them might have been at Microsoft afterwards or something, because they were in the Redmond area, so that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, they were acquired by Crave Entertainment.
Oh. But yeah. Seems like a really neat game. I'm happy that it's around.
Yeah, I look forward to playing more of it. But I think with that, unless either of you guys has anything to add, I think we'll wrap up the episode.
I don't have anything to add. I'm a little out of my depth when it comes to SNES sports games and mid-90s first-person shooters.
I need to get you on the mid-90s first-person. It's a beautiful world of 50% trash.
We should do a game club.
It's like mediocre games to like metal music, and it's just a whole vibe. It's so
weirdly
good.
That is also Super Nintendo sports games.
Yeah, it was. Listen, the mid 90s were a time. They knew what they wanted.
Speaking of like just sports games of that era, it's wild because there's just like 15 baseball games licensed by the MLB a year. Like it's nuts compared to what it is now.
Yeah.
And like the same thing, like, cause like, and I think I've heard stuff like, I think specifically with a lot of like football, for example, like you did have a time where like you had college football games coming out. I mean, multiple even before, EA kind of just had NCAA college football for a number of years until, you know, the kids were like, we should get paid. And they're like, well, we're just not going to do the game anymore.
Yeah.
But like, even before Madden had the exclusive license, like there used to, like there was like a 989 sports Sony game, the NFL game day. I think the first year on Xbox, there was an Xbox made NFL game. And then it just got to a point where it was Madden, and then Madden got the exclusive license and boxed out NFL 2K. And American football has basically just had like one party in town, except for Retro Bowl, I guess.
Were the backyard sports games, were those like backyard baseball, was that like officially licensed?
Cause yeah, they had little kid versions of players, and they had the logos. That's the key, is that you always have two licenses with every sports game. There is... Mm-hmm. The Players Association, and then the league itself. So, for example, in I think specifically the Super Nintendo Ken Griffey games, they straight up might not have even had the baseball license. They might have just had the license to Ken Griffey. Because I'm trying to think, like, I think they still had all the right team names, but I don't know if they had the right logos, but they definitely did not have the Players Association license, because, like, in those games, it is Griffey and generic names. Sometimes it would be like, oh, like, you know, like Dick Manningham is actually Don Mattingly. Like you might have had stuff like that. And like I think like Barry Bonds and Michael Jordan were famously like not in the Players Association, so they weren't really in games for a while. But there would always be like some power hitter playing on the San Francisco Giants named Brad Bronze. But yeah, that's, and there is stuff where you will see games from like NES Super Nintendo era where it'll be like there will be some players that will be familiar, but the teams or like the team names won't actually have like the right colors and stuff. You might just have like New York, but it's not like the Yankees or the Mets. And likewise, you might have it where you have the Yankees, you have the Red Sox, but you don't have any of the players.
Yeah, it was a different time. But with that, we'll call it an episode. Thank you very much for listening. You could write in to this show and tell us what your favorite baseball game on Super Nintendo was, or anything else. If you're listening to this in a place where you can review it, you should do that. If you have recently met someone who doesn't listen to us, you could make them forcibly through means that may or may not be legal. Just don't tell us about it. If you're playing the Wii Sports or Switch Sports demo, don't tell anybody. It's a secret. And you can follow us on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for joining me, Alex and Neil. And we will see you next time. Bye.
Ocarina of Time Game Club, let's go.
Ah, crap. Okay. Yeah, I gotta play that. This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.